Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. I don't have a co-host tonight yet. We'll see. Hannah was supposed to be here, but she had an emergency. Nicole was supposed to be here. She's had an emergency. The only person that has not had an emergency is Father Sebastian. He is here, and he was here on time. I was there to witness it. Hi, Father.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very good.
Are you putting me in a trance? You're really, staring me down.
No. If I was putting you in a trance, you probably wouldn't know.
Are you going to do that later?
Depends on if you buy me dinner.
Okay, well.
But you won't know if you buy me dinner.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't know. Because I was in a trance.
Yes.
We'll talk about trances. We'll talk about other things. By the way, Father Sebastian, if you don't know, if you're in the dark community, you probably know.
Really?
I would think so. I'll tell you exactly when I first heard about you was on this show.
Really?
Not this particular show in this particular theater, but in 2013, mm-hmm. I did a show and there was an actor, Andrew, from England, mm-hmm. who said he was a vampire.
Oh.
And we had him on the show and he referenced you. Reference your fangs.
Okay.
I never heard of you. And he was very intrigued by you. And it was the afternoon, so the sun was out, and he still said he was a vampire.
Well, you know, the myth is there to propagate safety in the human mind.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I go to church every Sunday.
Oh, good for you. Mm-hmm. But so vampires can walk in the sun?
Yeah, but it doesn't feel good.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about that. Before we get into the vampire talk, and there's lots to talk about.
I'm just going to use another microphone.
Okay.
I think your mic is working very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want me to start over, or you want me to...
No, you can keep going.
Okay. So we...
Unless you...
No, that's fine.
Prefer not to have any...
No. There's... Yeah, Father's...
I can
hear you and you're so far away.
Mike Power.
Yes, now that is the voice of a vampire right there. That is Father Sebastian. And you're a fangsmith?
I am.
You are the promoter and rock on tour that puts on the Endless Night Vampire Festivals.
I am.
All over the country.
All over the world.
All over the world. And you've been a vampire expert and an author.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that you do. When I moved to New Orleans... You moved here.
Really?
It was about
in New Orleans now?
I did for a couple of years. When I spoke to you on the phone, I remember I was writing a book, and I still have those recordings.
Okay.
I interviewed you over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that a couple of years ago?
I do.
Yeah. And I had just moved to New Orleans, and you're like, yeah, well, I'm moving to L.A., so I don't know if I chased you away or what happened.
I never lived in New Orleans.
Really?
Mm-mm. I just... do a job for the soul of the city to bring a lot of tourists there every Halloween.
Right, you do it every Halloween. Okay, we're going to get through your whole geography. Before we do, you complimented my tie.
Love your tie.
Was appropriate, because this is a Hillary's Vanity tie.
Really?
Do you know Hillary?
No, tell me more.
Hillary's Vanity, the most stylish in goth clothes, mm-hmm. and she just opened a store in Burbank.
Really?
On Hollywood Way in Magnolia, where all the cool stores are.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary's Vanity, she's got parasols. She's got goth clothes for men and women from size XS to 4XL.
Wow, so everybody's can be goth.
Anybody can be goth. And she was at your Vampire Ball at the Los Angeles one just happened last month or this month. I know that for a fact, and I know that a lot of people at the ball were wearing Hillary's Vanity clothes.
Fantastic.
So...
Hillary's
Vanity is our sponsor. They just opened their store, Hollywood Way in Burbank, right across from Porto's.
Okay.
Look for the parasols on the street, and then you'll know where you're going.
The dark black parasols? Or does she have red and white ones?
She has the one that sold out last year with the Halloween. Sold out. But she has them in every color, red, black, and white. She's got Halloween. She's got all sorts of things. She's got little cosplay fairy costumes for the kids. She's got everything.
That's great. And she's in Burbank.
She's in Burbank, but if you don't live in L.A., because we're here on RenegadeRadio.com, and we have a worldwide audience
mm-hmm.
on iTunes, on YouTube, on Stitcher, on Spotify, go to www.hillarysvanity.com, and you can check out all of her clothes. You can order, and I believe she's got free shipping over a certain amount, so I'm not sure.
That sounds fantastic. So Hillary's Vanity in Burbank, California.
Yes.
And what's our website again?
www.hillarysvanity.com.
Hillarysvanity.com.
Yes, exactly. And also audible.com. I shouldn't say audible.com. I always do that. I messed that up. If you go to audibletrial.com/DMS for the Dark Mark Show. audibletrial.com/DMS. Free audiobook, free 30-day trial to Audible.
Great. I love Audible.
A lot of vampire books, as you know.
There are.
You know what the most popular vampire book was?
What?
It's not, and you're none
besides
of
besides Dracula?
None of it's bigger than Dracula.
What's that?
Twilight.
That's true.
But
in a shorter period of time.
No, right now, if you put what is the most popular vampire book on Audible, it's still Twilight.
That's disturbing.
But they have Bram Stoker's Dracula. They have actually a radio play of Bram Stoker's Dracula with Tim Curry, Alan Cumming, and an all-star cast. They have Sookie Stackhouse books. They have Anne Rice's books. They have all the vampire classics.
I just read.
Okay.
But well, I do Audible, too.
Well, if you travel.
I'm driving.
Exactly. Well, if you travel, you know, I'm always driving to Las Vegas, Arizona, Utah for gigs. It's nice to listen to an audiobook, listen to a nice vampire story.
So you're a professional, Dark Mark?
Am I a professional? Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
You're a professional being you?
Yes.
I'm a professional being me.
You are. And actually, you're more successful than I am. And we're going to get into that.
Okay.
So this is Father Sebastian. Now, you might be giving me... If you start doing this with the hand, I'm gonna go crazy.
People have a problem because I don't blink when I'm focused.
Yeah, see, I blink like crazy.
It's funny because a lot of girls notice that when they talk to me, I'm just sitting there and it's like, you don't blink, and I'm like, oh, I don't.
Has that ever been too intense?
It creeps people out.
Well, it doesn't creep me. Yeah, because I've been on dates with women and I sometimes try to make sure, you know, with the piercing blue eyes that I'm, you know. Blinking. Making eye contact.
You got to blink, man. It makes people comfortable.
No,
if you
no,
don't blink, it creeps them out.
I've had a couple days where women are like, your eyes are just too intense for me. I'm like, I'm not trying, but you don't blink. So when did you learn not to blink?
I do weird vampire things all the time.
Okay. So is that a vampire thing?
I hope so.
Okay. So there's a couple things. Now, first off, let's get right into it. Who anointed your father?
I was ordained a minister when I was... 19. I went to a little seminary and I got him, and they told me never to talk about it. So I was, I was going to go to seminary to be a minister.
Okay. So you come from a religious family?
But not, you know, today everybody says you're religious, you're crazy, you're like you're hardcore. No, we were just like, my parents thought, you know, God was an important thing to have in life and hang out and, you know, go to church. And, you know, most Protestant ministers. And like the Anglican Church are not like Bible thumping,
right?
You know, it's Christians have a really bad name right now.
Okay,
and I think Jesus was a cool dude, man. I mean, there's nothing wrong with him.
Sure,
you know. So I like to get some inspiration from a guy who, you know, did some nice things.
Okay, but it wasn't forced on you.
Not at all. Religion. My parents were like, you know, hey, if you want to be a Buddhist, go ahead.
Right.
You know, just have a moral structure and treat people politely.
Right.
You know, it's about living here and today and respecting each other and, you know, trying to live life to the fullest.
But they were proud when you went to the seminary.
Well, I lasted like, I don't know, 4 months.
All right. Well,
but I got ordained.
Well, you got ordained, you gave it a shot. And where does the extra A come from?
The extra A is from Holland. So as I was crafting my persona when I was a child,
right.
I took bits and pieces of my name. So Sebastian is my saint's name. That's right. What my grandmother gave me for my Catholic confirmation.
Okay.
And I had to go through all these books of saints and re-memorize the saints and figure them out. And then when I was doing that, Never Ending Story was on, and I'm like, Bastion. And I was just like, all right, so Grandma, I'll use Sebastian.
Okay.
And I said, Bastion, is there St. Bastion? And she's like, no, there's a St. Sebastian, and he's the patron saint of archers and homosexuality. So when I moved to this village, I was fully operational.
Right. So, and how old were you at this time? When you were watching the Never Ending Story and being ordained?
Well, being ordained never.
Oh, no, I mean watching Never Ending Story and making up your persona.
In Catholic culture, when you're a child, you take a Hebrew name. My first birth name is Aaron.
Okay.
Okay, and then when you become 13 and you confirm your Catholicness,
right,
you take a saint's name to become a Christian. So I chose Sebastian.
All right.
And I always used it, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, I haven't, I just, that's who I am. And
okay.
So Father Sebastian, I didn't want to be King Sebastian.
Right.
You know, because when I got into the vampire culture, there was nobody.
Right.
There was like a couple new zines and a couple magical orders, but there was no community in person besides role-playing games. A wonderful game called Vampire the Masquerade.
Right.
And a lot of my friends went to me and they were like, we'd like the whole vampire thing, but we're not role players. We're lifestylers.
Right.
And they were all independent, so I threw a vampire ball. And the only time back then people got together was at Anne Rice, the Anne Rice Ball in New Orleans until 1995. And then I threw a vampire ball. And
was that New Orleans too?
Or where did you went to New Orleans for...
Where did you throw your first ball?
New York.
Okay, New York.
At a club called The Bank.
Okay.
But I was working in the nightclubs. I was working in a little nightclub called Limelight.
Right. That's hardly a little nightclub.
Yeah, I just had dinner there the other day. I'm having a dinner party. There's a restaurant in the building now, and I'm friends with the promoter that owns it.
Right. Isn't that the converted church?
It's a deconsecrated church, yes.
Right. And that's it's been in tons of movies, and it was huge. And now you're talking like your early 90s, right?
94 was when I first stepped foot in the building.
Okay. And you know,
changed my life. That building is my soul is attached to that building.
Geez, I gotta go in that building. I've heard about it. And I've gone to New York many a time, and I just never came by.
Well, you can go have a nice restaurant dinner there.
Yeah.
And let me get the information for the restaurant before the end of the show.
Okay.
Because it's an Asian fusion restaurant, really good food, and you get to sit in the old club rooms at Limelight.
Right. So they don't do the clubs anymore. They just
no.
Just
oh no! It's it closed as a club in 2007.
Right.
As far as I can recall, it was owned by Avalon by at that time, the Avalon here in Hollywood.
Right, right, right.
And I was working there, living in the building.
Okay.
I was, my experience with that building lasted about 13 years.
Okay.
And I'm still, like when I go there, I tell stories. Like I walk into the restaurant and I'll be like, "Yep, I used to work here. This used to be where all the flyers were delivered in the afternoon," All the things that happened in Disco Bloodbath and Party Monster were very true, but right. Not in the same way.
Oh, okay. So you were really in the club kid, like in that...
I didn't do drugs or drink, so
no,
I...
And you still don't.
Mm-mm.
But...
I did for a while, and it was...
Oh, okay.
That wasn't fun.
But you were in the midst of that whole, the whole Party Monster, all the club kids.
Yes. I sat right next to Michael Alec.
Yeah?
In the office when I was doing my guest list. I was a promoter at Limelight for several years.
Oh, okay. And were your nights similar at that time?
Well, let's talk about what the vampire is. Unless you
please. No. I'd love to. I was getting to that.
Do you want to start that now? I mean, you have your schedule.
I have no schedule.
Okay.
I follow the conversation where it goes.
So, vampires.
Yes.
What they represent. There's a new modern mythology.
Okay.
That exists. That's very diverse. And it can transform into anything from an alien, like in the movie Life Force,
okay,
to a cursed vampire like Dracula,
mm-hmm,
to an atheist vampire like Lestat.
Okay.
Okay. What makes the vampire special, it's the monster that you can become and is angelic in our current perspective. But vampires have not always been like that. Vampires were in every single human culture, the vampire mythology has existed in one form or another, from the Chinese hopping vampires who throw rice at them where they have to pick it up, to the incubi and succubi of ancient Sumeria.
Right.
One of the things is there's kind of a vampire myth in ancient Egypt, but that is truly an Anne Rice invention.
Okay.
Okay. The mythology of the modern vampire began in Serbia and went to Istria, Croatia. Then... It really didn't come to Romania in the way that we know it today, in the mass market way, until Dracula was published.
Right.
But in Mary Shelley and a guy named Polidori wrote in the 1820s, Frankenstein, and there was another story of a ghost storytelling thing, and from that came Frankenstein,
right.
Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
And then her brother, published it under Lord Byron, which was not very popular with Lord Byron at the time.
I can imagine, yeah.
And his name was Polidori. And he wrote a short story called The Vampire with a Y.
Right.
And then you had throughout in Paris in the 1830s, 40s, you had four vampire theaters.
Okay, the Grand Guignol?
No, that came later.
Okay.
Then in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s, you had Varney the Vampire and Carmilla.
Okay.
Okay.
Not familiar with them. But...
Those are penny dreadfuls.
Okay.
Okay. And you know what a penny dreadful is?
I know what a penny dreadful is.
So for the audience, can you say what a penny dreadful is?
Penny dreadful are little horror books that they had sold at that time. Is that correct?
Yes.
It's kind of the comic book of its era.
Yeah, but with no graphics. Like maybe a one on the cover or something like that. But it was mainly text.
But a smaller book that had a story in it.
Maybe 20 pages.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful TV show called Penny Dreadful.
Yes.
Which lasted 3 short seasons. However, a lot of the characters that you have, like Dracula or Dorian Gray or Frankenstein, those are the penny dreadful genre.
Right.
Okay. Then Dracula came out as a response to Slavic. Dracula was representing the reason why Bram Stoker connected Dracula, the character in Romania, to his vampire was because of a large immigration of Slavic people.
Okay.
That were considered a plague.
All right.
So in his story, he's cursed by God, and the whole romanticism of the story actually is only in Bram Stoker's Dracula the movie.
Right.
But the dominant submissive predator prey mentality is what really is the crux of the modern vampire mythology.
Right. So it's an analogy about immigration, really.
Well, that's just one example of what the vampire can do as a mythology.
Right.
Okay. You can look at it as a dominant submissive thing. You can say the vampire energy came from alien worlds and came down and turned this person into a vampire. Or there can be a religious.
Right.
Then the movie genre started and vampire movies took off in the 1900s in 1922.
Nosferatu.
And I did an event in a theater where that premiered in Paris. We did a vampire ball and played Nosferatu in the theater where Cabinet of Dr. Caligari was out. It's the only theater. It was called the Delphi Cineblast. It was the only cinema that actually survived bombing in World War II.
Wow.
In the East. And they called it Klein Hollywood.
And how was that? Did you feel the vibe in the room? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a cool theater. But the problem is you can't turn the music too loud. So it was a nightclub experience. It was very limited.
Okay.
Since I don't live in Europe anymore, I live in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with being able to have the resources to do European events is limited. So only this year we're doing Germany, Paris, and Dublin. That's it. Just 3 cities.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. They're fun. Endless Night's a great experience.
And I can attest to that, but Dublin seems a little off the beaten track.
Bram Stoker, my friend.
That's right.
Not he's a mad Irishman.
That's right. And so that brings us up. And that was one of the first questions I want to ask you, and I think I did ask you last time, was the difference between vampire with an I and vampire with a Y.
Well, that's been blurred in the last couple of years. Let's go through the vampire history a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So then in the vampire history, you had the movie genre, and you had Hammer horror movies.
Right.
Occasionally, I have these people that claim they drink blood and they were vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the 70s, there was a Luciferian satanic vampire coven in Paris that was the first group of people that identified as vampires in a lifestyle or religion or occult practice.
Right.
They died out. That thing lasted like 2 or 3 years. I met the guy that ran it, and he had a big beard and kept chewing gum. That's all I remember.
Wow.
He didn't speak English and smoked a lot of weed, so I didn't really get to talk to him much.
I guess that's how you survive.
He was a big burly guy, really cool. Actually, very nice guy. Then what changed the game for the modern vampire is every 25 years something happens.
Right.
Okay. The vampire genre, the vampire mythology that we know, started with Polidori and evolved into Varney the Vampire, then Carmilla, then Dracula, then Nosferatu, then Christopher Lee. In the 50s, it kind of took a break. And then in the 60s, Hammer Horror.
Right.
All those amazing movies.
Right.
And then Roman Polanski, The Bald Vampire.
Sure.
He was my neighbor in Paris, actually.
Polanski?
Yeah.
Yeah, you ever run into him?
Yeah, sure. I was kind of shy, though.
You ever see 12-year-old girls running out of his house? Or?
No, I don't.
You don't think he does that anymore?
I think he's smartened up.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Blackula.
Blackula, 70s. Right. But Anne Rice really changed the game.
Right.
Okay. So in the 70s, you had Anne Rice come out with Interview with the Vampire, the homoerotic,
yes,
atheist vampire, or having, you know, like, I'm cursed by God, and there's no God.
So you're telling me that the homoerotic atheist vampire, that was completely her invention? That hadn't...
Pretty much, yeah.
Been, okay.
I mean, you know, yes. Where she brought the vampire genre away from Dracula. She added to the vampire mythology.
Right.
And she created a vampire mythology, Interview with a Vampire. It made it seem like, wow, this could be real.
Right.
Then in the 80s, an organization that broke off of the Church of Satan started a group called the Order of the Vampire.
Mm, okay.
And they were a magical order. They're all called right. The Temple of Set.
And that's magic with a K?
I it is such a pain in the butt today because millennials have swapped everything up.
Right.
Okay.
Or does it CK? I want to make sure I'm spelling everything right.
Vampire was predominantly the underground way to spell vampire.
Right.
You are a vampire, your lifestyle. But right. What happened is that got all messed up when the internet got popular.
Oh, okay.
And the glory of the vampire was hidden. But
So it's like Facebook. Everybody fucked it up. So basically, so vampire with a Y was people in the know, and then
Correct. And then
people spread it out on the internet, and then it's just
you can't go to Google search with a vampire with an Y anymore.
Right.
So when I'm running my events, I use the I.
Okay, but there was a movie Vampire with a Y in the 30s, right?
Yeah, there's, I don't know, 700 vampire movies.
Yeah.
You can't keep up with them.
Okay. So
there's ones that come out every year in shorts. I met a guy who came and got fangs for doing a vampire short, and he did, like, incredible production.
Yeah.
I was like, you did that out of your house? And he's like, yeah, man, I just know what I'm doing. So then...
So it's a magic order.
Then two things happened next was Near Dark came out.
Right.
Where you actually followed the vampires. It was from the vampire's perspective instead mm-hmm. of the human's perspective.
Right.
Okay, and Lost Boys was kind of like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And Lost...
That came out pretty much the same time.
Yeah, sure. And I think 87 and 89. 87 and 88.
Yeah, it was pretty close to each other. And then.
But look at the vampire genre. Here, again, something changes.
Right.
You have the homoerotic vampire versus the Christian vampire, the self-loathing Christian vampire like Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Lestat embraces what he is.
Right.
And Queen of the Damned, an Interview with the Vampire and Vampire Lestat, that trilogy of the Vampire Chronicles, which is, to me, the real trilogy.
Right.
That changed the vampire game forever in a way that Twilight changed things.
Right.
So then in 1989, the first organization in history to declare itself a vampire religion, the Temple of the Vampire started, and they're affiliated with the Church of Satan.
Okay.
Okay, Anton LaVey, not Satan worshippers. And they...
We've discussed the distinction on the show almost every week for some reason.
The Church of Satan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I've always told the story about how I met Stanton LaVey, and he wasn't particularly impressed with me, but whatever.
Okay, I haven't had the opportunity to meet him yet.
Yeah, I'm friends with Charles Manson's son, and he had we were doing a show together, and he had mm-hmm. Stanton introduce him, and he was with one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Wow!
And I went up to him, like, "Yeah, nice to meet you." And he's like, he kind of gave me a little attitude, and I was like, "Okay, whatever."
Sorry, I didn't bring any girls with me tonight.
Yeah, well, I did, but I don't know if they would be up to his sacrificial standards. But anyway, so. So anyway, so the Order of the Vampires is...
The Order of the Vampire in 1984, and I'm talking about the vampire lifestyle in regards to people identifying as a vampire.
Now, why do you think it took that long for people to declare that, to actually form a
culture.
Group like that?
Just, you know, culture evolves. You know, it just happened.
Like, why wouldn't it happen, like, in the 60s, where counterculture was...
Well, people were calling themselves Satanists.
Okay.
I don't really know. I mean, it's just, there might have been... That we don't know of,
right?
Because it was hidden in time,
right?
Really, I'm not sure.
Because people would think the Middle Ages would be when the vampire, when they would have, like, you know, sex and things.
In the Middle Ages, they thought that people, there was people who. We'll get into that in a second. That's a mythology.
Okay.
So this is the mythology from the movies, and then we go into 1990.
Right.
Another major benchmark. The Temple of the Vampire is an important benchmark for the overall perspective of lifestyle vampires.
Okay.
Because they were the first real clan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The, definitions of vampires have was what I was introduced to in the vampire community of the early 90s. Then it changed. Something completely changed that marketed being a vampire is cool.
And what's that?
Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh, yeah.
That came out in 1990. Where you are the vampire.
Yes.
And that role-playing game brought was the foundations of the vampire lifestyle. The LARPers, the live role players,
right,
would run these games, and people like me would go to these games looking for other people that had this urge to identify as a vampire. Just like, you know, why do we do it? We don't know.
Right.
But it's a draw. It's a calling. It's you know.
Well, you would think you want to meet like-minded people, people correct. Interested in the same things.
So I got into the role-playing game, and I loved it. But it was right. the only place I could go where I could hang out with other people wearing fangs and dressing up, and goths hated us.
Really?
Like, oh, my God. Like, I remember being in a supermarket on Avenue A in New York, and this goth dude with, like, big death rocker with his
right,
big
right,
hair
right,
and
right,
stuff
right.
was shopping. He looked like Edward Scissorhands almost without the scissors.
Sure.
And he was, like, shopping, and some girl comes up to him. He's like, Mommy, look at the vampire. And he goes, I'm not a vampire. And I'm like, dude.
Relax.
You're a goth.
Yeah.
And the girl's like, ew, you're not a vampire, or something like that.
And
but
and did you have your fangs in? So
no, I
that's
was,
not a vampire. I'm a vampire.
Like in True Blood, the opening of True Blood.
Is that what it is? Is that what happened?
There was a scene. If anybody wants to see a funny scene, watch the opening of True Blood.
Right.
So what I hung out at a club in New York called The Bank from between 92 and 95.
Right.
Okay. Until 99, actually, when The Bank closed. It was the, like, you know, every city has their legendary goth club, like Bar Sinister.
Right, right. That was the goth club.
Or Das Bunker or Coven 13 or
sure.
something like that.
Sure,
And the goths really just hated the vampires. Like,
wow.
Because they thought they were always being called vampires.
And they thought you were infringing on their scene, maybe?
No, they just didn't. Like, I remember going to...
But they're dressed sort of like vampires.
Well, they're wearing all black. Yes. So here's the difference between a goth and a vampire.
Okay, let's hear it.
Vampire is a lifestyle.
Yes.
Okay? No matter what you call it, whether you're a sang or a sai or a blood drinker or this or that or whatever definition you call it, you're wearing fangs, dressing in black,
yeah.
all right, and you're saying you're a vampire, all right, you're a lifestyler. It's a lifestyle. Like, you're gay, you're living the gay lifestyle.
Right. Well, but then people would say you're gay if you have sex with somebody that's your own gender. People would say you're not a vampire if you don't drink your own blood or drink somebody's blood, right?
Well, blood drinking traditionally has not been a part of vampire.
Okay.
It
really? That's news
to
me.
Oh, yeah. It's a movie thing.
Okay.
Most vampires were like spiritual vampires, like incubi and succubi or demons or
right.
that would suck the life force.
Okay.
Like the hags and stuff. So Vampire the Masquerade took the entire vampire mythology and tied it together.
Not just the blood drinkers, but everybody.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the blood drinkers. I'm talking about the mythology.
Right.
Not the lifestyle, but the mythology.
Okay.
So you basically, what you know today is accumulation of Polidori, Bram Stoker, Anne Rice, and Vampire the Masquerade.
Right. Okay.
Okay. In the modern vampire, werewolves being the arch enemies of vampires is from Vampire the Masquerade. The clans of vampires comes from Vampire the Masquerade.
Okay.
Instead of character classes, you have clans.
Okay.
Like, you know, in D&D, you have fighter, warrior, mage, stuff like that.
Once again, you're talking to somebody who's never played D&D, but well, I take your word for it.
Well, play D&D, man.
Well,
you should come to my game.
I will come. But
you got to read the rules first, because I don't teach people.
Then I'll get. That's a challenge. I might just do that.
I like challenges.
Well, let me ask you something, because you were talking about how vampires look. What about the long hair on men? Has that always been like a thing?
Most vampires that I know. Let me finish the evolution of the mythology.
Okay.
Then, from Vampire the Masquerade, the popularity of this game. Aaron Spelling did a really crappy TV show called Kindred the Embraced. But
I remember that.
Blade,
yeah.
Underworld,
right.
True Blood,
yeah.
And Twilight
mm-hmm.
were all ripoffs of Vampire the Masquerade.
Really?
The whole secret society of vampires,
right.
of community of vampires,
mm-hmm.
the entire... There was a secret conspiracy called the Camarilla, which was like a Illuminati kind of mentality, where in Vampire the Masquerade, the vampires are the Illuminati.
Right.
Okay. And they rule the world secretly and control the governments and have a thing called the Masquerade, where, like, vampires have to pretend to be humans.
Right.
And anybody who finds out about it, they have to use their vampiric powers to erase their mind or kill them.
Right.
Okay, so the humans cannot know vampires exist unless they're a ghoul.
Ah.
Okay, so if you look at the structure of True Blood,
yeah,
that the Sookie Stileclass novels were a Vampire the Masquerade Chronicle.
Right.
They were a game.
Okay.
Charlene Harris was playing Vampire the Masquerade when she created that.
Okay.
So that's why you have fairies and werewolves. And Vampire the Masquerade exists in a universe, like you have the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right.
Called the World of Darkness.
Okay.
Okay. And Vampire the Masquerade was... It mixed True Blood and Twilight. It mixed all the vampire mythology that existed before 1990.
Right.
Capped into Vampire the Masquerade. Okay. Like, the vampires are very Anne Ricean.
Okay.
Okay. Some vampire clans are affected by holy water, and all the thing that vampires have in common is they're all descended from Cain, the first murderer,
mm-hmm.
And they have generations, and their clans are from those generations.
Right.
So you have the Nosferatu clan.
Okay.
The Tremere clan, which is the sorcerers.
Right.
The Nosferatu are they live in the sewers, and they live underground, and they just trade information.
What clan were you in?
My friends in White Wolf, the publishing company,
okay,
always call me a Toreador, which is the artistic vampires, the club promoters, the musicians, the rock stars. And I just love another clan called La Sombra.
Okay.
But they said I'm not devious or evil enough to be La Sombra.
Dare to Dream.
Well, like, I get yelled at all the time because I always say that I'm a Gryffindor from Harry Potter, not a Slytherin, and then I keep getting labeled as a Slytherin because I wear black all day.
Right. It's a lot of, yeah.
So then Twilight came along.
Sounds like an identity crisis here.
Not for me. I know exactly what I am.
But people can't peg you as one way or the other.
Well, they can try to say whatever they want, but I know what I am.
Okay.
You know, the best thing you can do is be yourself.
I would think so.
Yes. And then Vampire the Masquerade... got really popular, and they rebooted the game like they did with everything else called Vampire the Requiem. They were going to make a big MMO like World of Warcraft that looked really cool, and it ran out of money.
Mm.
So they sold the gaming company and the IP, the intellectual property, in 2015 to a company in Sweden, in Stockholm, called Paradox Games.
Okay.
So White Wolf became an imprint of this company.
All right.
And now they're a licensing company, and they're going to take the World of Darkness to the next level. And I'm really excited because I'm a huge, gigantic fan of Vampire the Masquerade.
Well, I can see that.
Yes. I respect it tremendously, but it's not a lifestyle.
Well, what's the next level?
Well, it's not the next level. It's just two different things.
Right.
You know, in the vampire community, you have different types of people. You know, you have different – you have the scholars that are like the – you know, people that research vampires.
Which obviously you're one.
Well, I fall into all the categories. I play Vampire the Masquerade.
You're like the ultimate. You're the ultimate vampire.
Okay. I try to be a well-rounded vampire.
Oh, okay.
So I think that fits it. But I think the vampire mythology is about to go through a new renaissance.
You think so, yeah.
Yeah, Twilight gave us a break.
Right.
From the romantic atheist vampire. Anne Rice is getting popular again. She's living in Los Angeles with her son Chris, and they're working on books together. Christopher's great. He has a big passion for preserving his mother's legacy, and I respect him tremendously for that. Anne Rice is, she went through a Christian phase during the Twilight years.
Right, I remember that.
And she came out of it because the church was, her son is gay, and she loves her son more than anything in the world.
Right.
And I think that seeing the relationship of Anne Rice and Christopher Rice is it's admirable. It's a very good, healthy relationship.
But you still say you're a Christian and a vampire.
But there's no contradiction in that at all.
Okay. But you just said with her there might have been a contradiction.
Well, the contradiction she had was that the church she was involved with, the Catholic Church, was not very pro-gay.
Yeah.
And so
I noticed.
You know, I think that Jesus, if you know, he was hanging out with prostitutes and thieves and murderers, wouldn't have a problem with someone being gay, especially in the Roman Empire.
Obviously.
You know?
I mean, that's just common sense. Obviously, my problem with religion, and I consider myself a Buddhist, but, you know, I should meditate more. I should do a lot of things more. But I just have a problem with all religion in that man's kind of subverted it all. And, I see I see the religions I see and the religious arguments I see people have is just ridiculous. I don't think there's one. I don't know if there's one religion or one God. Myself,
mm-hmm.
that you know, I can't say that. Okay, this guy's right, and everybody else in the world is wrong. I can't put that together in my head.
I think religions are just like cultures. You know, you got French and German. You know, two different perspectives on the same thing.
Right.
You know, Germans got to eat and go to the bathroom and pay bills and have money and have a house and everything like that. They just have a different language and a different culture.
Okay. So now that we've gone through the whole timeline of Vampire, and that was quite thorough. Thank you.
That didn't include my contributions.
Oh, wait. Oh, let's go, please.
Well, let's get into that in a little bit because I'm a little shy.
No, I was going to say, when was the first time you were aware of vampires? What was the first, do you recall like the first vampire?
Mm-hmm.
And what was that?
The Count from Sesame Street.
Right. And you were drawn to him immediately?
No, I thought he was silly.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't really get it.
He wasn't your favorite Muppet?
No, my favorite Muppet is Big Bird.
Okay.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the Spanish and Portuguese Big Bird is a little pink bird.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's not big, he's pink.
He's like a little bird.
Sesame Street's different in most countries.
I can imagine. But what was the first time, except for the Count and Sesame, when was the first time that you saw a vampire and were drawn to it?
I was having dreams of vampiric entities when I was a child.
Really?
I was having hag syndrome all the time and sleep paralysis, and I haven't really talked about it until just now.
Oh, wow.
I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I would feel something above me, and I would be like, what the hell is going on? And I would cry and scream, but I couldn't make any noise. It was completely paralysis.
Wow.
And I had a tremendous amount of flash-forward dreams, like deja vu in reverse.
Oh, wow.
I get them often. Sometimes I'll just sit there and I'll like daze out, and then I'll have a vision of something that happens in like 10 years, and I won't have the experience of the thing, but I'll have the feelings from that moment.
And then 10 years later,
time will catch up, and I'll be in this position, and I'll be like, I could walk in here, and they're not all like prophecies, you know. They're just
right.
Like sometimes you're just like, hey, you're psychic, live it. And I think that the psychic powers of humanity are very underdeveloped, and they will develop through technology.
Right.
I just think that they're too obscure right now, and it's such in an infantile state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just like consciousness was right. When we're cavemen for psychic powers.
Right.
Okay. And,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say so.
And sometimes one human gets it. Okay, that's why there's so many charlatans and whatnot. That's why, you know, when Houdini put out, you know, prove to me there's life after death.
Right.
You know, someone...
Nobody could.
Usually when people ask me what life after death is like, you want to know my answer?
Yeah, let's hear it.
What year were you born?
What year was I born?
Mm.
79.
Do you remember 1974?
No.
That's what it's like to be dead.
Okay.
Just puts it in context.
All right. Well, that's interesting.
So, what do we do next?
Well, let's. You brought it up. Your contribution to the vampire culture.
Okay, so I was playing Vampire the Masquerade from 1993 to 1995.
Okay.
And I loved it. It was fucking cool, man. I mean, just in these deep, dark nightclubs in
New York. I've never role-played.
Dude, it's so much fun, and it's kinky.
I
don't know why you're not getting into kinky things, but kinky is awesome.
I didn't know role playing was that kinky. You were talking about Dungeons and Dragons. I didn't know that was kinky. And then,
well, my D&D game has four beautiful women in latex sitting around a table wearing fangs and playing D&D.
Yeah.
If their character dies, they get tied up and put in the table.
Interesting.
Not in the table. They get hidden in a secret room.
Right. Dungeon is part of the game.
I am the dungeon master, putting the dungeon, putting the dead characters in their grave.
You put the dungeon in Dungeon Master.
Correct.
So role playing. So really, you know, when you ask rock stars why they got into being a rock star, like for the girls, when you were role playing, was it for the girls?
Everything in human society is about courtship,
right,
and reproduction.
Okay.
So it comes down to sex.
All right.
Okay, the first priority in your life is survival as an individual organism.
Mm-hmm.
The second priority is reproduction.
Okay.
So our entire culture is based on courtship.
Okay.
In whatever format, dating or seducing or whatever you want to call it, women seduce, men do the opposite. Men are, rites of passage are important. Women have their natural rite of passage, which you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And men don't. Men have to go out and hunt. That's what we're made for.
Or get into role-playing games.
Well, what I'm talking about is those role-playing and acting and stuff like that. The men are more cooperative than women naturally.
Right.
Okay. That's why.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why. Because women are competing to protect their child.
Okay.
Genetically.
Okay.
Okay. I'm talking about genetics. Society has changed that.
Right.
Okay. To what we value is equality. And I think that's cool. But I'm talking about, you know, the primal nature of our humanity.
Right.
Well, you know,
even in the vampire subculture, this goes on.
Vampire subculture is different because men and women are equals.
Okay.
More so than in normal society.
All right. And is that something that drew you to it?
Oh, I love it. I the predominant number of friends that I have are female.
Right.
My Fang clients are 80% women.
Right.
My events are 70% women. You were there. So how many guys did you see compared to women?
It was probably, I don't know if it was quite 70-30, but it was more women than men, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
The vampire archetype, the way I present it, appeals to females more than men.
Okay.
And I believe that in today's society, those primal connections to our nature should be recognized. Our primal animal instincts should be recognized and not ignored.
Because,
you know, we didn't transhumanize or genetically engineer something new. But what's great is today we have equal opportunity. If a woman comes to me and wants to do a job, and she can do the job and make me money for my company and do the good business and be professional, and she's more qualified than the guy, I would hire her.
I would think that'd be common sense, but unfortunately,
I know, right?
I don't know how that is not.
Well, I am controversial with some of these hardcore feminists.
Okay.
But most women, for example, you propose to vegans to go hunting and slaughter their own meat. Okay.
Right.
And most of the time they say they might not do it themselves, but they don't think that's bad as long as it's not for sport or the suffering of an animal.
Right.
Okay. And I'm a hunter. I hunt deer.
Okay.
Okay. I do it because it's a way of understanding the value of life.
Okay.
And I don't do it all the time, and I do it because those animals are going to suffer in the winter. And I don't have it. That's not an excuse. That's just my personal choice.
Right.
But doesn't mean I'm like running around on the back of a Jeep, you know, shooting random animals and wanting them to hurt and be in pain. I want it to be as quick and painless as possible.
Right.
But it's going to, there's no natural predator for these deer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're overpopulating the area and they're all starving to death in the winter.
Now, do you eat the venison raw or you cook it?
Oh, I bring it to a butcher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, my cousin and I, he's like a all-American boy, you know.
Yeah.
And we bring the deer to a slaughterhouse. Not a slaughterhouse, a butcher.
Wow.
And then we donate half the food to the homeless.
Well, I can't believe how fast the time has gone, which usually happens. But because I got to get into this now. Your family, now, you are known as the second time I ran across you is when I went to New Orleans and went to your vampire mall.
Okay.
I don't think I think I may have passed you. I don't think I actually talked, but people were showing me the fangs that you were making.
Mm-hmm.
You are a Fang Smith.
That's right. I'm a Fang Smith.
And from what I read, that you have a dentist in the family.
My grandfather and my aunt.
Yes. Okay. And so how did you start? I mean, when did you start making fangs?
I went to my grandfather because my girlfriend asked me for fangs for the prom. And I said,
high school prom or your prom?
High school prom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And her name was Dawn.
All right.
Great vampire name.
Yeah.
And she kind of had that Morticia look. All right. Long black hair and like a belly chain and long dresses and stuff.
All right.
And Dawn was awesome. And Dawn was terminally ill with a brain tumor.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. She didn't make it into the today, but she had a good run.
Right.
I'm actually going to go visit her grave after 20 years. So Dawn wanted fangs for the prom, so I found a fang smith named Gregor, who works for a company. If you want to look him up, he's Gregor from Strange Blades.
Oh, okay.
He makes chainmail and stuff like that. In 1990, on the 8th of November, 1993, 6 months before my prom, she and I opened our mouths and got our fangs made by Gregor.
Wow.
At a vampire LARP at the this little hotel in New Jersey.
Well, I can imagine before the internet, it'd be hard to find a fang smith.
Well, I'm a very good networker, so.
Oh, okay.
And New York is a networking place.
Right, right.
You know? So we got our fangs, and I remember I went home and I dropped one down the sink.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? because I was so excited to have them. They were great things.
Yeah.
And Dawn and I went to the prom as vampires.
And how'd that go over?
It was great. It was fun. Yeah. Everybody loved it.
Yeah.
And then everybody asked
me. But they knew you guys. They were like, oh, of course.
Well, I didn't go to high school with her. I went to, she went to my prom. She was a year older than me.
Okay.
So I graduated high school in 94.
So, but I mean, if people knew you or people knew her, then yeah,
we had fun, man.
It was why not?
You know, prom should be fun. You know, how many, you know, I mean, all the controversies.
So you weren't one of these, I'm not going to prom. I'm too cool for that.
Going to prom, man. You got it crazy.
Yeah, see, I was like you. I was like, I'm going to prom and I'm going to have fun. And I started mosh pits. It was great.
Well, the thing is that I already was hooked up in New York.
Right.
With the Limelight because I was working at Limelight at the time. So I could go, you know what? Who wants to be on the guest list at Limelight? We all drive into the city and the most popular kid in the school, you know?
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, and how long before you took it into a business?
About a year and a half later, I was running the LARPs and trying to make it professional because I love doing what I do. My dad told me, are you an idiot? Do what you love.
Right.
Okay, find a passion and make it your life. Okay, and that means you got to make a living.
Right.
So... for me, the drive isn't money. It's just living my passion and creating a legacy.
Right.
So it's kind of a quest of immortality.
And making a living.
Well, I mean, I live very modestly. I'm not living in a big mansion. I'm not driving a $50,000 car. It's right. My drive is not making money. My drive is using money as a tool to create the endless night world.
Right.
The vampire world that I'm building.
Right.
And every pair of fangs I make, I reinvest everything.
Right.
So, you know, I was really excited to buy a couch for the first time because I'm a gypsy. I travel all over the place. Settled down for the first time.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
And why L.A.?
Because this is going to become vampire capital of the world.
And why? But why L.A.? Why is this going to be the capital?
Because the resources are here.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. I mean, it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
Anne Rice, our queen, is here. I bow before her any day.
Okay.
All right. You know, I'll never get to the level she got.
Right.
And
well, you know, never say never.
A lot of people say that. But the thing is with Anne Rice, I have a tremendous respect for her as an author and a creative person. I don't agree with everything she does, but I think she contributed to the vampire mythology, and she changed my life.
Yes.
So she is my queen, and I will always keep my tip my hat to her.
And you've met her?
I had some book signings, but I try to leave her be. You know, okay. I'm not like one of those fans that calls. She has a phone. You can call her and stuff. I watch her videos. I know who she is. She knows who I am.
Right.
She can spell my name properly when she signs my books, which is great.
Okay.
But I don't impose myself on her at all.
Okay.
I just think it's about being professional and polite. She's doing her thing. If she wants, if she wants to invite me into her house and have tea or something like that, I would be honored.
Right.
And I would, of course, accept. But she doesn't seem to be very kosher with the vampire lifestylers.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
It's not her thing. Okay. That's okay.
Okay.
You know, but I'm still a fan, and I'm still going to go to buy her new book at Barnes & Noble at the Grove.
Right.
I'm still going to shake our son's hand and say your podcast is awesome.
Right.
Okay. And I'm still going to be grateful she exists in my life. And I'm not wanting to impose myself. So I'm letting her be her, and I want to be me. I want to be myself. I don't want to be her.
Now, on the flip side of that, have you had fans that were just going crazy meeting you and maybe that became uncomfortable?
It's all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not at the level of you know, Anne Rice in any way, but I do have my fans.
Right.
And sometimes they'll appear out of nowhere. I get recognized a lot in Paris.
Yeah.
I get recognized often on the streets of London, less so in LA. I moved to LA to kind of be able to be amongst peers.
Okay. Because you lived in Europe for how long, or did you?
2001 to 2015.
Okay, so that's why you have such a. Because as I said, the first time I met you, first time I heard about you was an Englishman that had your fangs. Mm-hmm. It was very, very much, enraptured by you and.
Oh wow.
And your lifestyle. He was very much. Yeah. You don't know who Father Sebastian is? I'm like, I'm sorry. Now I know. But.
I think that the level of fame that I do have has been very natural.
Right.
I felt that I could have gone a lot further, a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, of course, I got my fans that say I'm evil and the devil and stuff like that. You know, like Howard Stern effect.
Right.
You get, you know, for every fan that listens to you for 2 hours, you get some hater that listens to you for four. And you,
right.
You know, I think that a lot of people think that what I did was easy and natural and just they can do it themselves, God bless them, because the what I've been through to build this vampire world.
I can see it. Yeah, I mean, I was at the ball. I could see
it's hard work, man.
I know it is.
It's not a joke.
I know. I've promoted shows. I've promoted clubs. I know it is. People don't know what goes on behind the scenes. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, and it looks like a simple goth club.
Yeah,
you know, and
but
then
nothing simple. You're in trouble.
No,
yeah.
I mean, I really have a lot of respect for people in the hospitality, entertainment, and event production business because
right.
I know what it's like. But I threw my first dress code party when I was 13 on my 13th birthday.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So this, along with vampires, this is something that you were interested in an early age.
I go to the nightclubs because I don't drink.
Right.
I don't do drugs.
Right.
I smoke weed once in a while.
Okay.
But I don't go to the clubs for any, like, I'll go dancing. I go to Cloak and Dagger on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
I like going to Bar Sinister.
Right.
L.A. has the history. I mean, Lost Boys is from California. I was born in California. I already did Europe for 15 years.
Right.
I've been in every country making fangs in Europe. I have incredible relationships with people all over Europe.
Right.
I'm from New York originally. New York was the vampire capital, then Paris was, and then I'm bringing it here.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of people say when, you know, Father Sebastian's in town, this is the capital.
Is that what it is? You're the center of the lifestyle universe?
I wouldn't say I'm the center, but I'm definitely the most controversial guy in that community.
Is there beef in the vampire lifestyle?
Crips and Bloods, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
But there's no violence, you know, and it's just some Facebook.
No biting, nothing.
No, sadly.
No.
There's different groups and organizations out there, and I predominantly am running a professional business trying to cater to my clients, and that's what I focus on.
Right. So the Endless Nights Vampire Ball.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first do it? What was your first one?
I wanted to run a vampire ball at Limelight in New York, and Peter Gation, the owner, the guy with the eye patch in the movie.
Right.
He was like, you need to build your equity as a promoter.
Yeah.
And then I went to New Orleans, and I got invited because I went to the Dark Shadows Festival in June of 1995, and I met this girl that looked like Wednesday Addams but older and really hot, and I was like, I know, I was 19.
Yeah.
All right. And she's like, you want to come to New Orleans for Halloween to go to the Anne Rice Ball?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
do I? Because
you couldn't get tickets unless you remember the fan club. And people were joining the fan club just to get tickets.
Oh, really?
So what Vampire the Masquerade didn't definitely change things. But when I went to New Orleans,
yeah,
and I saw Anne Rice's ball, the real one she did, the big one, year after Interview with the Vampire came out.
Oh, wow.
Okay, this was October, Interview with the October 1995.
Yeah.
I was working at Limelight running Vampire Games, and
And Vampire Games is what?
Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
You gotta check this stuff out, man.
No. I didn't know if there was like an Olympics for vampires. I didn't know what you were referring to.
There's a Cannibal Olympics.
Okay, I'll look
that up. It's a TV show in Japan.
Okay.
But what happened was I went to Anne Rice's party. And it was a Friday night, and it was in front of St. Elizabeth's, this orphanage that was just like a city block with this incredible gates in the Garden District of New Orleans. And Interview with the Vampire had been out for a year. Everybody was vampire crazy. I was making fangs like mad.
I can imagine.
First year, like literally I haven't been making fangs for a year, and I'm like, my hands are bleeding. I'm making so many fangs. I mean, these hands have made...
How ironic.
These hands have made thousands of fangs.
Yeah.
So what happened was Sandy, the girl I was working for Roadrunner Records at the time. She was a publicist.
Okay.
We got in the line, and there was 5,000 people.
Wow.
And a horse-drawn carriage comes down the street. Another one.
Oh, yeah.
And the coffins, and these big pallbearers look like they're Adams family, come out and pull this coffin out, and they move the crowd, right, and they pop it up against the gate. And then they pull another coffin out and pop it against the gate. And everybody's like, what the hell is going on? This is the grand entrance.
Yes.
And out of the coffin comes Anne Rice.
That's great.
A horse-drawn hearse.
That's great.
And she welcomed all our guests and started waving and goes, got on a microphone and goes, you know how Anne and she is with her fans. She's a role model for anybody of equity to love her fans.
Yes.
Okay. And she goes, I have a surprise for you, my friends. And out of the second coffin came Kirsten Dunst.
Wow.
Okay, and they got in a carriage and they greeted every single person that walked in the door of that ball.
Amazing.
5,000 people. It took 3 hours to get them in.
Amazing.
Or you could walk right by her, of course, but that ball was incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I need a vampire ball.
Yes.
New York. And I went back, and I went to Peter Gation from Limelight, and I'm like, I need to do a vampire ball. And he's like, no.
Wow.
I'm like, dude, I'm packing your vamp. I have these vampire. I want the whole club one night. He's like, no. You go to the bank, and you throw a vampire ball there, and if you get over 300 people, we'll talk. And I had 670.
There you go.
And sold 666 tickets.
And now it's worldwide. How many vampire balls are happening this year?
We just did L.A. and
right.
So this year's schedule, there's two different events we do. We do okay. salons and vampire balls.
Okay.
And then we have a kinky party called Mask, which is like Vampire Eyes Wide Shut.
Okay.
All right. So the first product is the vampire salon usually is this more intimate, casual, like a boudoir, or salon noir type event.
Okay.
Okay. It's more loungy. There's some dancing, but people are hanging out talking.
Okay.
Okay. That's the salon. Then the vampire ball usually goes from 10 to 4, and at midnight we put all the performances together with three shows, and then we all howl like wolves. The whole club is wonderful.
Right.
And then at the end, we have a costume contest, and we give free tickets out for New Orleans.
Right.
So that's a standard vampire ball with our dress code. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let the audience be the decor.
Right.
So we walked. We started in New York. I did four vampire balls, and Susan Walsh, a vampire reporter, disappeared investigating vampires the month of my biggest vampire ball I ever had, which was 2,800 people.
Wow.
Yeah, that was at Limelight, and that was right before they closed. And I was
she
like,
disappeared.
Investigating the vampire stuff. So look up Susan Walsh, The Mystery of Susan Walsh.
Interesting.
And then I was the most visible. After that three vampire balls, and being in the New York Times and on MTV, the whole media came down upon me.
Ooh.
And they were just like, where's Susan Walsh? I'm like, I don't freaking know where Susan Walsh is.
Wow. And the next one is Las Vegas?
So, yes. We started with L.A., then we did Tampa. We had 1,200 people in Tampa at the Castle.
Now I've been finding out Tampa is a real hotbed for underground goth and
it's
vampire.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Because they have an incredible club called the Castle that's owned by a goth.
Okay.
And Jenna Torturous from the band Jenna Torturous.
Right.
Jen is his partner.
Wow.
So they've got steampunk balls. I mean, the Castle and Florida has an incredible community.
I
got
to hang out in Tampa.
Yeah. Ybor City's like a little French Quarter.
Right.
With chickens.
Oh, wow. Everywhere. Oh, great.
We had 1,200 people.
Amazing.
And last year we did 800. So our brand is expanding. The Endless Night Vampire World is growing like incredibly. And then we're doing Vegas at the Artisan Hotel on April 29th.
And I performed at the Artisan Hotel. It's an appropriate place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What'd you do there?
I do shows there. I've done my friend Ms. Absurd plays stand up bass and sings. Mm-hmm. We have burlesque and I do comedy. It's great.
You can find all this at endlessnight.com. Then we go to Germany for Wave Gothic Treffen. Then we're gonna be in. I'm gonna be in Paris holding a small little gathering, meet and greet with Father Sebastian.
Okay.
Because Paris is a very difficult city to run a party in.
Right.
I might do something in November, and then we go to Dublin.
You were telling me.
And we're taking off our summer vampire festival. We do a vampire festival every 2 years called Conclave Festival.
And this is one of the on-years?
This is the off-year.
Off-year, okay.
Yeah, we're doing July 12th through 17th, 2019. It's in Ramingsting, Austria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, you're all booked up till 2019?
My Fang business is booked up until 2019, yes.
Wow.
And I don't have any more appointments.
And New Orleans every Halloween?
Yes, and then New Orleans is our big day. We had to actually, last year we had 1,450 people.
Mm-hmm.
We had so many people this year, the costumes were just everywhere.
Yeah.
We added another room and cut 400 tickets off the ticket sales.
Oh, wow.
Because we're really concerned about the customer's experience. We want them to cut. Our deal is every person that walks through that door, right. Our motto is a king or queen of the vampires.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, having gone to your events, I did feel like the king of the vampires.
Really? I'm glad that you did.
I did. No, both times I've gone in New Orleans and I had the greatest time. And I had a great time talking to you today. Where does the time go? We got to have you back. There's
Thank
so
you.
Much I didn't get into. There's so many questions I had. You're a fascinating guy.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on the show. Hannah, I hope everything's fine with your car. I'm going to find that out in a little bit. Nicole, whatever the emergency is, I hope it passed over. Next week is actually our 5th anniversary.
Congratulations.
You know what we're going to have?
Mm-hmm.
You ever see Better Off Dead? The movie with John Cusack?
Oh, my God.
Or The Last American Virgin?
Last American Virgin, no, but I've seen Better Off Dead.
I need my
$2.
Diane Franklin, the actress from Better Off Dead, who played the French.
Is she French?
She's not really French.
She did great.
She's coming back. She's coming on the show next week.
Wow.
Yeah. And we got all sorts of other surprises and hijinks. And Father, once again, give them where people can find you and all the information.
Simply go to www.endlessnight.com. It's not Endless Nights. It's endlessnight.com.
Thank you, Father. And go to Goth Comedian and for all your goth needs. And everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Rock and roll.